Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, February 11th, 2017. This is episode 1362. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by 23andMe, a personalized genetic service based on your 23 pairs of chromosomes found in your DNA. For Valentine's Day this year, give that special person the gift of knowledge. Go to 23andMe.com and get $20 off when you buy before Valentine's Day. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Oh, it's so nice to see you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. No, don't worry, I don't actually see you. It's a figure of speech. And a couple of people jumped up and put on pants. No, I can't see you. Don't worry. Although, how, if I can't see you, did I know what you did just then? Our phone number, we talk about tech here, and not that kind of tech. Not magic tech, real tech. Tech you can buy. In fact, I don't even like to, a lot of technology shows, especially when you see them on, like, you know, TV and stuff. They talk about, flying cars and drone deliveries, all sorts of stuff that's, you know, maybe not exactly around the corner. I'd like to talk about stuff you can actually go to the store and buy today. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO, if you want to talk about that with me. Computers, the internet, home theater. In fact, our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, is just around the corner, about half past the hour. Digital photography, smartphones. We talk a lot about that. Smart watches, got a new one I'll talk about in just a sec. Virtual reality, that's real. Kind of the jury's out on virtual reality at this point. I noticed that there were, I guess, HTC Vive booths, or you know how they do that at Best Buy and some of the other stores like that? They have the manufacturer will have a special area. It wasn't Vive. It was Oculus Rift. This is the Facebook-owned visor, you know, VR visor. You put it on and you're immersed in a game or an environment or whatever. And they closed quite a few of them. I guess nobody was using them. The interest, it turns out, in virtual reality is primarily focused on the tech press and the hardcore tech enthusiasts, of which some of you I know are. And the rest of the world's going, no thanks. Don't really want to put on a visor for hours at a time and pretend I'm in another world. I guess even gaming is kind of like that. I mean, right? Gaming is as big a business as it is. It's a niche business restricted to certain. And it's not just kids, by the way. I think a lot of times people say, "Oh, gaming, that's people under 25 who have nothing to do. They don't have a job. And certainly there are a lot of gamers, you know, young gamers. But I think the largest contingent of gamers is middle-aged men. At least a certain kind of game, what we call the first-person shooters like Call of Duty. Middle-aged men, probably who have lives of quiet desperation, and, you know, they come home from a job they hate to a family they loathe, and they blow things up because they've got nothing else to do. I'm imagining that. I don't know. I play them, so what does that say? I love my job. I love my family, so I'm wrong. And I'm not even middle-aged anymore. Unless I'm living to 120, then I'm middle-aged. I noticed, though, and I think you probably noticed this, as one gets more interests in life, games kind of take the back seat. That's why casual gaming is so hot right now, right? The little quick hit thing you can do in the line at the grocery store or you know, waiting at DMV or, you know, just the little game you can play quickly. That's why I think VR is such a commitment. VR, you have to. Virtual reality. You have to buy a lot of expensive gear. The Oculus Rift, about $700. Plus, you need a computer, a PC that is very late vintage, expensive, starting at $1,500. So $2,000 plus all in. And then to set it up. I know. I have one in my living room. It has both the Oculus Rift and the Vive because, you know, I have to look at these things. And it hasn't worked for a while. And even my 14-year-old, who you think would be like, he every once in a while say, yeah, that thing's not working. I said, yeah, I know. I got to fix it. And then we go on. He goes to play Overwatch. I go to play Field Runners, and that's that. I think it's kind of, is it fizzling? Maybe it's fizzling. Sometimes we cover, you know, I cover stuff that's here, but not nobody wants to know about. In which case, it quickly, we stop talking about it after a while. I keep talking about smartwatches, and I don't think smartwatches are a huge taking off category. Although Apple says, without giving any concrete numbers, that this past quarter, the holiday shopping quarter, was the best-selling, biggest revenue ever for the Apple Watch. Biggest revenue ever for the Apple Watch. But they don't say how much, which, you know, kind of what they sold, you know, two instead of one. What is that? It doesn't really tell you anything. Biggest revenue ever could be an inconsequential number. And I'm sure it's millions because it's Apple. It went on sale yesterday, and I ran out to get the new Android Wear 2.0. This is Google's response to the Apple Watch. And it's been a couple of years since Android Wear came out, so it's been, I almost want to say hotly awaited. I don't think so. Maybe long awaited by some, by a very few, update to the Android Wear watch. This LG Sport is the one I got because this is the first Android Wear watch to have built-in GPS, I think. Maybe not the first. It has a phone in it. If phone calls, I can make and place phone calls because it has a SIM card, which means I'm paying a fee just to have this watch every month. It does all the fitness stuff. Not very attractive, I have to admit. I mean, the Sport, which is the big one of the two, $350. So that's a relatively attractive price, same price as the Apple Watch Sport, is big. It's honking big. Not just the face, but the thickness for all that battery and GPS, and you kind of look like you're on work furlough, like you're a prisoner wearing a special bracelet. You know what I'm saying? And I think the real problem I have, I like watches. I do like watches, but they're more like jewelry, right? At some level, and then at another level, you get the $20 Timex, and it's just to tell you what time it is. That's, I think, smaller. That market is starting to dwindle because people's phones tell them what time it is. And we don't really need more than one thing on our person to tell us what time it is. This does tell the time, but it's certainly not jewelry. You couldn't say it's aesthetically pleasing. It does look a little like the runner's watches, and it has some of that functionality. So if you're a serious hardcore workout aficionado, it's nice to have your heart rate, and as far as I can tell, although I just got it yesterday, I haven't thoroughly tested it, the heart rate's pretty accurate. It's got your GPS, so you know it can track your, although that kills a battery, I think. It'll prefer to use the GPS on the phone. I see a lot of smartwatches just say, well, you have a phone, that knows where we are. It's got three buttons. Isn't part of the problem with smartwatches is the user interface. It's such a tiny little thing, and it's hard to figure out. So this has swiping in two directions, when I have Android Pay now, which is, that's new, isn't it? I can now pay for stuff. Something I've had on the Apple Watch for a while and rarely use. And I had it on the phone, too, and rarely use. I just don't know. I think we see this all the time, and part of my job, I think, I will say, part of my job is to try this stuff so I can give you some sense of whether it's worth getting. And as far as smartwatches go, whether it's the Apple Watch or the Android Wear watch, I'd say, you know, somebody called these a sidecar to your phone. And it's kind of what it is. Do you need a sidecar for your motorcycle? Well, some people do, but most people don't. One of the thoughts about these watches is that, well, oh, then I don't have to be rude and take my phone out to see what's going on. But it's just as rude to be looking at your watch every 5 minutes. And by the way, I notice if anything big happens on my watch, I take out my phone. So it's, you know, I'm not really improving the situation. I would guess that this is a very narrow category. A number of companies like Motorola, which made probably the best Android Wear watch, have dropped out of the race. And I think that Apple and Fitbit own it, and they're neither of them doing that well. Fitbit even laid off people this past month. So Android Wear 2.0. All I can say is, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take some calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Somebody asked Steve in Palmdale asked, do you like the Android or Wear new smart Android Wear smartwatch 2.0 better than the Apple Watch 2.0? I think you just, if you use an Android phone, you should use the Android Wear. If you use an iPhone, you should use the Apple Watch. You can, apparently, and I'll have to try this out, use the Android Wear on an iPhone. So, but I would say, if you're an iPhone user, get the Apple Watch. And I, you know, there are a few little things I like better on the Apple Watch. Both are kind of ugly, to be honest. Actually, I should, oops, I made somebody start talking. Stop talking. Thank you. You know who I want to make start talking right now? Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. She's there. She's answering the calls. Hello, Heather Hammond.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Hey, man. it's going great. Do you wear a wristwatch?
You know I do.
Because you have to stay in touch with what time it is.
Well, a little bit.
And yours is jewelry. I have to say, it's beautiful.
I can't give this up because it matches my Tiffany bracelet.
Yeah. And I like watches as jewelry. I think for a man, it's one of the few things a man can wear as jewelry, right?
That's true. Is this a hint? Am I to get you a new watch for Valentine's Day?
No, I have plenty of watches. The problem is I have to wear these really ugly geek watches because it's my job.
Poor you.
Poor me. Instead, I could be wearing lovely, highly overpriced. See, this is the reason. The other reason I don't wear jewelry watches is because, you know, they all do the same thing a $10 watch does, but some of them cost more than a house.
Ugh, yeah.
And so I feel guilty, frankly. And also, it seems like a foolish waste of money.
But it is.
There you go. There you go. Is yours a Cartier?
It's a Fartier. It's a faux Cartier. I'll admit it.
I once, you know, if you go to New York City and you go down to the Soho area, there's a Canal Street. They have a bunch of watch sellers, cheap watches. And I once bought I think it was a Rolex, except it was made in Geneva with a J. So I think that was, but it was only $10. So
if I'm not here next segment, I think it's because the fashion police came and hauled me away.
But from a distance, this is the point. Who knows? Everybody looked at that and said, oh, she's wearing a Cartier. I have an actual Cartier, which I rarely wear, and it's way too – I was appalled. I did get a Folex, though. So let's take a call. Enough of this silliness. Who should we address on this fine morning?
Mike in Portland, Maine has a question.
Love it. Thank you, Heather Hammond. Hello, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I'm hoping you can help me out here. And by the way, I have a Cartier, too. It was my great-grandfather.
Oh, see, now that's cool. Was it a tank watch?
No, it's the pocket watch, open face, hunting
beautiful
watch, and
beautiful.
It's gorgeous. And you know, I'm afraid to take it out of the safety deposit box.
But yeah, well, and that's more history than anything else. And that's what some people say is, you know, watches are heirlooms, and why would you buy a computerized watch? Because that's going to be obsolete in a matter of years.
Exactly.
No hand me down on that.
But that's not why I'm calling today. Today,
okay.
I'm calling you as I'm being plowed out on my landline cordless phone sitting in my car as they're plowing my driveway.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I got on with you just as they came to say, move your car.
We had snowpocalypse this past.
Yeah, it's amazing. And this is only the first of the three storms.
Wow.
The question that I have for you is this. I do some podcasts. I write stories for podcasts. And usually I write them out, and then I read them through Audacity.
That's neat. Are they fiction stories? What kind of stories?
No, they're true stories, usually about aviation. I'm involved
in
a number of different podcasts, aviation podcasts.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Airline Pilot Guy and the Airplane Geeks. And I write stories based on my experiences and and try to bring some emotion and some feelings into them.
You know what's cool is that is a long tradition in radio broadcasting. I think of Gene Shepard.
That's who I grew up on, and
me
I
too.
Model myself after him.
Me
he
too.
Was the absolute best.
All he would do is tell stories, you know, and actually the younger generation is probably familiar with A Christmas Story, which is, you know, you shoot your eye out with a Red Ryder rifle and all that. That was a Gene Shepard story. He narrates it, in fact.
He's absolutely fabulous.
Oh, I miss him.
I got to meet him. I got to have lunch with him one time.
Oh, jealous.
He's an amazing guy. But anyway, one time only, I did a story live, and I got to tell you, it came out great. I was really happy with it. Except I have no idea what I said, and I have the MP3 of it. It's 13 megabytes.
Gene Shepard always did his live off the cuff, you know, and that remarkable.
I was trying to do what he did, and I was very pleased with what I said. But I have the MP3. I would love to have the text file, and I can't find a program, or at least a cheap program, for my Windows computer that will transcribe it for me from the MP3. I can find some online programs, but nothing that will handle a file that big.
See, one of the things, and I'm going to have to see if Amazon still does this with their Mechanical Turk, was they used to have this transcription service by humans, which are infinitely better at this than machines. And all you have to do is watch, you know, television with the closed captioning turned on, and you can really tell when a human's writing it and when a machine is writing it. It's kind of humorous when a machine's doing it. Same thing with the closed captions on YouTube. So there is lots of machine transcriptions. I'm looking at actually one, I don't know if it's still out there, called Transcribe. That's a Chrome plugin, an app for Chrome. I see quite a few, but what I'm interested in is this Mechanical Turk, and see if they still do this. So the way Amazon did it, which was quite clever, it was first of all very inexpensive. They would take each sentence of your MP3 and farm it out to three or more people for each sentence, and they would get back three transcriptions. They would compare them and look for consensus. And if they didn't get consensus, they'd farm it out to some more. Once they reach consensus, you know, two or three people all agreeing, that's what he said, they'd add it. And they were able to do this because they could only charge, you know, fractions of a penny per transcription because it's just a short little thing. They were able to do this quite inexpensively. So I would look for Amazon Mechanical Turk transcription to see if they still do that.
Turk as in T-U-R-K?
Yeah. It's the name is interesting. It comes from... hundreds of years ago, in the 19th or 18th century, a scammer put together a automaton chess playing machine that was a Turk. It had a turban and smoked a hookah and played, and it beat all the best masters of Europe. It was called the Mechanical Turk. In fact, it turned out there was a little person inside who was a chess master who was playing quite well. But so it was a famous scam of the 18th century. And I guess Amazon liked the story. I'll tell you what, let's keep looking. There's companies like Speechmatics. I'm actually looking at a Quora. This would be very good. I'll put this in the show notes. A Quora Q&A. I like Quora for this kind of thing. What is the best tool to automatically transcribe audio files? And it has quite a few recommendations.
I've done some searching, and I found a few, and frankly, I found most of them don't even work. I install them on a computer and try to run them exactly as said and follow the instructions, and couldn't find anything that really worked, and so I'm trying to find a way to...
My friend Steve Gibson pays a human, a court reporter, to transcribe his Security Now podcast. That works well, of course, but it's expensive because it's a human.
That's a good idea. I might have a connection that way.
Yeah, actually, So she was a court reporter, probably still is, and that means she can transcribe quite quickly. Elaine Ferris, F-E-R-R-I-S is her name, and she does our Security Now show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'm just looking at the Mechanical Turk page, because I see... Mike, I see casting words. So I see people, other services using the Mechanical Turk. ACXIOM. So I Googled Mechanical Turk transcription. But I don't know if Amazon offers it directly or just offers Mechanical Turk. Casting words. It's a Mechanical Turk requester. This is kind of the best of both worlds. It's cheap and fast, but it's using humans.
That sounds great. I'll have to check that out. And yeah. I hope it'll be in the show notes so I can just, you know, click on it.
Yeah, I'll put a link. I'll put a link to this Quora post as well.
Thank you, Leo.
What's the name of the podcast that you do?
I work with a couple of them. I'm just a podcast. I call myself a podcast whore. We're off here, but a podcast squatter. I work with the airline pilot guy.
I know that one, yeah.
And also the airplane geeks. And both those guys are listeners. I know that they're listening right now, both Jeff, who runs it, the airline pilot guy, and the airplane geeks.
I'll have to look for one of your stories. That's great, Mike. That's a good way to keep your hand in, isn't it?
Just did one on Gene Cernan about two episodes ago.
Oh, did you know Gene Cernan?
I did not know him, but I did a tribute to him.
Neat.
You can find it if you go on, also it's on the column Jet Wine, wine like W-H-I-N-E. You can see a picture of me and both listen to that story and read it.
And I will check it out. And this is on the podcast, so you'll get a few others too.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. See you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. So somebody in the chat room tells me, this is cool, that there are YouTube offers human-based transcription services as well. So if you're on YouTube, go to translations in your account on YouTube, and Welsh Don says, look for get quotes for professional translation and transcription services. So it's both translation and transcription. And I will definitely be listening to for your stories on the Airline Pilot Guy podcast and the Airplane Geeks podcast. Meanwhile, time to talk home theater. Scott Woo-hoo. Wilkinson is here, our home theater geek. His podcast, twit.tv/HTG for home theater geeks. He's also editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum. Hello, Mr. Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Good. Good. So Super Bowl's over. We don't have to buy any more TVs.
Nope.
Thank goodness.
Grammy's coming up tomorrow night.
Okay. Okay. That means you want to have a good sound system.
Correct.
I have to tell you, we were watching something last night, and there was a song on it, and I thought, oh, I think Lisa said, oh, I love it. And she turned it up, and it sounded great. Mm. TV audio has improved immensely.
Yeah, it's really very good. And the Grammys are a perfect example, a wonderful example of live performance over the TV.
Do they that in 5.1, or is it stereo?
Yeah, they do.
They do.
No, it's 5.1.
So if you have a surround sound system,
yep.
How do you get the 5.1 to come out of your speakers?
Well, you as long as your tuner, however you're getting your TV signal, has a 5.1 output and it goes to a receiver, say, with 5.1 and you have 5.1 speakers, you'll hear it that way.
So they're setting the encoding, because there's some sort of encoding that has to go along with the audio, right?
Sure, sure. Well, it's Dolby Digital. It's an encoded
How do they do it, though, so in such a way that if you have a single speaker coming out of your TV, it'll play just fine. If you have stereo speakers, it'll play just fine. And if you have surround, how do they do that?
They do that. They have underneath the Staples convention, you know, the Staples Center where the Grammys are, it's called the Truck Farm. And they've got like a bunch of semi-trucks filled with production studios. And they have two different audio mix stations, backups for each other, and they go from one to the other as well because the groups, you know, alternate.
You've been back there. You've seen that, right?
I have. Yeah, I have. And they mix it in such a way that I think they give a two-channel feed as well as a 5.1 back to New York, where I guess it's on CBS. I think that's where it is. And then that goes up, and they encode it in a way that it'll be fine. For a TV speaker all the way up to 5.1.
I know on a Blu-ray disc, for instance, they have multiple tracks.
Yeah.
And the Blu-ray player, you can actually select Dolby or whatever kind of sound you want.
Mm-hmm.
If you're watching on a cable box, the cable box has to pick, right, which of the soundtracks to play back into your receiver or your TV. And then your TV has to understand what it's getting. I mean, this has to go all the way down.
It has to go all the way down the line.
Yeah,
it's really more of an issue of the sound engineers have to be aware of what happens when you downmix. So if you only have two channels, they're not going to send separate audio streams. but the 5.1 is going to down mix it. All it has is stereo.
Okay. So Blu-ray has so much space that they can put multiple tracks on there. But on a TV signal, obviously, you don't have unlimited space.
Correct.
Especially if you're coming down through the cable or through the satellite, you've got a lot of limitations. So they're sending the full sound, and then the whatever's receiving it has to say, oh, let's mix this down to mono if it has to.
Or whatever. Yeah, exactly. And they have to encode it in such a way that it does that gracefully.
Interesting. So this is a tough job for them.
It's a very tough job. They've been working all week long setting up and rehearsing. I normally go down there and go backstage and, you know, prowl around and look at stuff and talk to people. But I wasn't able to this year.
I remember when you first got stereo sound on TV,
not so long ago,
and they'd have a logo at the bottom that would open up and in stereo.
Yeah, right.
That was a big deal, and it really did make a big difference. Even just left-right makes a big difference over mono, especially if you're watching a show like the Grammys where there's musical performances.
Right, now, any kind of concert footage.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to say you may think you're getting Dolby Surround. If you're lucky enough to have an AV receiver, it will tell you what it's getting. And I notice on some of the things, like my Roku, sometimes it'll say PCM, which is just stereo, right?
No, PCM, it refers to the fact that it has been decoded. That
it's digital.
Uncompressed. It's uncompressed audio. PCM.
But it doesn't say anything about how many speakers it's using.
No, sometimes it won't say that,
Yeah. And I've seen it, though, and I think this is movie-specific on some, like Netflix and Amazon. It really bugs me on Amazon. I'll buy a movie, and it won't have surround sound. It'll just have two left, right, and I can see it on my receivers. It's stereo.
Right.
It's like well, I'll give you a great one. The Jeff Bridges movie, Heart. He won an Academy Award for it. He's a country music performer. It's a music movie.
Yeah.
And I was watching it on Amazon. I was getting just stereo, and then I watched it on Google Play, and I got surround.
Well, that's because Amazon chose to send it to you.
Interesting.
In stereo.
So it's not guaranteed.
It's not guaranteed.
Even
it depends on
the
studio and the provider.
Yeah.
You know, the content provider, how they end up deciding to send it to you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So ideally, the Grammys, you should see, if you're using a receiver, a Dolby logo and 5.1 or something like that?
Exactly right. Okay. Precisely right.
And your TV, if you buy a TV, you'll see on the box, I know, what it can handle.
Well, the TV is a little interesting because it depends on where the source. Okay, so you've got a cable box or a satellite box, maybe even over the air. Where's that coming in? And where is it getting connected?
Right. So if I'm connected to an AV receiver, which is the ideal, obviously, then
the
I can tell.
The ideal situation.
But what if I'm just, as many people do, they got a set-top box, HDMI, plug it into the TV.
Yep. Well, there you got a problem. Either you'll hear the TV's own speakers.
Right.
Or you can take the optical digital audio out from the TV and put it into a sound system, an AVR or something like that. The problem there is many TVs will take a 5.1 input from an HDMI source, say, and spit it out in two channels.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to tell. It's almost impossible to tell when a TV does one or the other.
So people who have listened to this show will remember for years, I told Scott, I'm happy with two channels. I got two speakers left and right. They're plugged into the TV, probably plugged into the headphone port, and I was happy. And I said, I don't care about surround sound. And then you finally convinced me I got an AV receiver and a 5.1 system, which means a subwoofer, a center channel, left, right, and then two in the side that are surround. And now every once in a while I'll be watching something and I'll think there's somebody in the house because it's coming. I swear, more often than not. And you don't ever want to sit next to the surround speakers because sometimes, you know, sometimes I have to.
Yeah.
And that's really weird. Because you hear the guy selling beer at the ballpark, but louder than you hear the announcers.
Well, and you'll hear that at the Grammys, too, because the surround channels are primarily the crowd ambience.
Right.
They've actually got microphones up in the crowd.
Yeah.
In the stadium of the Staples Center. And so if you're sitting near a speaker and somebody does something cool and everybody jumps up and screams and shouts.
It's all coming from there, the side.
Whoa!
Yeah. Wow. Scott Wilkinson, find out more at his podcast, twit.tv/HTG, and read all about it at theavsforum.com. Grammys.com. Have a great Grammys. I'll be sitting right in the middle. I'm not going to let anybody take my seat. Good. Right in the middle, right in front of the TV.
As Sheldon says, that's my spot.
That's my spot. Thanks, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this.
Oh, you cut your litany short of why you stay with stereo.
Why?
2 ears.
I only have 2 ears. Why should I try with 5 speakers?
Man, that old chestnut. Yeah, definitely.
Well, but the amazing thing about my 2 ears is I can detect spatial sound. I can tell if something's in front of me or behind me.
You only
me
have
or...
2 ears, but there are an infinite number of directions from which sound can
exactly.
come.
Exactly. I do have to say, now that I have surround, I love it. Although, I do have that little problem of somebody in the house. Everyone.
And if you got Atmos or overhead speakers as well.
Somebody upstairs. And I'm in a single story dwelling. So somebody on the roof.
Or you might think a bird got or a bat got in the place if it flutters overhead.
Yeah. All right. All yours for 212 seconds, my friend.
Thank you so much. By the way, I will not be here for the top of the hour.
Got it.
And I won't be here next week either because I'm going to be on vacation.
We're going to record with Chris Marquardt after the show today because he's going to be gone for a little while. Do we want to record? We can. Chris, we did because he's sponsored.
Sounds like Scott's taking off. He's not going to be here for noon.
He's running out, so we can't. Anyway, okay. Have a great time. Where are you staying?
Esalen.
Oh, wow, you hippie, you. Why are you packing any clothes? You're not going to need
those. Well, you know, it might be raining a little bit. We're celebrating my wife's birthday.
Oh, what fun. Esalen, how fun is that?
We're both old hippies, you know.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Oh, that's fun.
We're going to be staying at one of really their most beautiful place, the Point House right on the
I've bluff. Never stayed there. I want to hear all about it.
Oh, man, it's going to be so great.
Good. Well, let me not take up more of your time. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Welsh Don, you're right. Infinite? I don't think infinite. That's true. We cannot distinguish more than certain angular difference between where sounds are coming from. It's not an infinite number of directions, but it's a very large number, let's say. Let's see. Wheelhouse, what is the best way to split or daisy chain HDMI to 5 to 7 televisions? Wow. That's pretty amazing. An HDMI splitter is the way to go. And I don't really have any good recommendations for a splitter. I do know various companies that do a good job generally of HDMI routing equipment. Geffen is one. Key Digital is another. DVI gear is another. They got their name from the old DVI connection, which became HDMI. But in any event, DVI gear, Key Digital, and Geffen are all excellent companies that make HDMI routers. Monoprice does too. And I haven't heard anything bad about them. So, and they're generally less expensive. So I would look at that as well. Thank you, Geek and SD. Judge, has HDCP 2.2 now been cracked or not? Ooh, that's a good question. I have not heard that it's been cracked, so I don't know. If it I wouldn't be surprised. It will eventually. There's no such thing as uncrackable code, except when we get maybe quantum computers. Atort Aloha, why is OLED really worth the extra money? Because it looks really good. Looks really good. I prefer it to LCD. What can I say? Ken Crayley, what's the best time to upgrade to an AV receiver? Thinking to upgrading one about with Dolby Atmos? Anytime is the right time, if you ask me. But in terms of cost, that's a good question. AV receivers usually come out in the spring. Black Friday is probably a good time. I know that they go on sale by then. I don't know if you don't want to wait that long, but. Anyway, Belkin, Goober, Belkin is a good make too, but they do more cables than switchers and routers. And stuff.
Have a great time in Esalen. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you so much. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to talk about tech, and as you can see, that covers a lot of ground. Everything from watches to surround sound. Computers, too, and the internet. My friend Trey Ratcliffe, photographer extraordinaire, His stuff is at stuckincustoms.com, and he's really amazing, talented photographer. People love his work. I love his work. But he's also a geek, which is nice, because he can talk about the gear intelligently. Most photographers these days can. And he has, in a couple of times now, kind of stunned the industry by flaunting conventional wisdom. First, by moving from his Nikon DSLRs, the big mirror cameras, you know, big ones, to the mirrorless Sonys, the A7 line. Now, he's a landscape photographer. He does people, but he mostly does landscapes. And for that, he says the Sony is better, lighter, easier to use. And he's really got great results out of it. But just this week, he published an article which shocked the photographic world. As most photographers, artists, musicians, for years, Trey's used Macintosh computers. Me too. You know, Lightroom and Photoshop and the music composition programs and so forth. You know, he's been very happy. He's even created software with the company MacFun for, you know, an HDR program called Aurora. He's got a new program called Luminar, I think, that's a kind of a Photoshop competitor and very inexpensive on the Mac. I did notice, though, that the most recent program that he did, Luminar, was also on Windows. And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. And maybe now the other shoe drops, because he wrote a blog post on Friday that said, Apple is dead to me. I'm switching to Windows. Wow. We talked a little bit about this when Apple came out with its latest round of Pro, and I'm going to put Pro in quotes, laptops, the MacBook Pros, because they weren't as fast as the Windows laptops of the same price. They made sacrifices. It seemed odd. They limited the total amount of RAM, for instance, to 16 gigabytes. And they were very expensive. They even raised the price on the MacBook Pros. And a lot of Mac professionals, video editors, photographers, artists, musicians, kind of choked a little bit. I'm one of them. I choked a little bit. Because we expect, and we may still see later this year, the fastest computers out there. You know, at least Apple should offer, you know, somewhere in their line, whether it's an iMac, a MacBook Pro, a Mac Pro, somewhere, kind of a state-of-the-art computer. And currently they do not. Not even close when it comes to the laptops. But Trey put his money where his mouth is. Instead of just complaining and moaning about Apple, as most of us have done, saying, come on, Apple, please. He says, that's it, I'm done. And he went out and he bought a $5,000 Windows laptop from MSI, like a big Windows laptop. He said he had to. He's shooting with a camera, the Hasselblad X1D, that has massive files. And he says, my MacBook just, it can sort of handle them, the MacBook Pro, but it's slow. He says, I need a workhorse. It's too bad that Apple has chosen not to care so much about the creative professional. We were the ones that got them through the lean years. Oh, well. He bought an interesting choice, actually, an MSI WT72, which is really a desktop computer with a laptop in a laptop box. $4,599, 32 gigs of memory, and very, very fast Quadro NVIDIA graphics card, which is really designed for digital artists as opposed to, like Trey, as opposed to gamers. A lot of money. Running Windows 10. And he says, Windows isn't so bad. He says, Windows is okay. Wow. I'm kind of with him. I bought an equally expensive, well, not quite, but an expensive Windows computer, the Surface Studio, which is kind of a cool all-in-one that has, I don't know if you've seen it, the screen, like an iMac, you know, it's in front of you on a base, but if you want, unlike an iMac, you can tilt it down to as little as 20 degrees, so it's like a drafting table. And I use it. I love it. And it's great for photography. And, I mean, it's got touch. It's everything Apple probably should have done, but hasn't. still not crazy about Windows, but you know, if you live in Lightroom or Photoshop, or if you live in an application and you don't go out into Windows land that often, it isn't different from the Mac at all. It's the same. And truthfully, Windows is pretty polished, I have to say. Windows 10 is pretty nicely done. So it's an interesting I think for some shocking development from Trey. His website, if you want to read about it and see his incredible photos, and I don't want to give him a big fat plug because I love the guy, is stuckincustoms.com. Stuckincustoms.com. And the article is, Apple is dead to me. I'm switching to Windows. Dale in Palmdale, California. Hi, Dale. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How's the weather up there?
Spring has arrived in Northern California. We were flooded for so long. And I know there's some serious weather related problems all over the state. I hope you're having some nice weather.
It's cloudy and overcast, but not raining.
At least it's not raining.
Right
now.
Isn't
that funny? You can't win. We had 7 years of drought. Now we have too much rain. It's crazy.
Can't win for losing.
Nope.
Okay. Well, my question is, I'm trying to upgrade to Windows 10, and I went and got the software and everything. It's on my computer.
Okay.
But every time I try to upgrade, it comes back with an error after it's done everything, and it says, something went wrong. Please turn off antivirus software and try again. Well, I've tried turning it off. I can't.
Do you have security software on the system?
Yeah, well, I've got AVG.
Yeah, so.
The Windows. Windows One.
Yeah, this is what antivirus software is supposed to do, right? Is keep people from changing system files, because that's how virus authors behave. So,
exactly.
What I try doing is uninstalling AVG, just at least for now.
Yeah, I did that, and I go in and I go into the control panel and try to uninstall it with the thing, and I tell it to uninstall, and it does not do it. And then,
Because again, antiviruses, they're trying to prevent, bad guys from doing this. So they are sticky. Almost, what I would do is go to the AVG website. Almost all of these antiviruses, besides the uninstall that's just built into Windows, will have a uninstaller standalone program, and that's really what you need, because the bad guys, if they can do it automatically, they will. So they make it really hard to do, and you definitely want to get that security software on there. And in my opinion, you don't want to put it back, and I'll tell you why. We just did a story on this on our security program, Security Now with Steve Gibson. Antivirus software, in order to work, hooks deep, low into the operating system, and in many cases, opens you up to viruses. It actually makes you more vulnerable, not less. Windows 10 has Defender, which is a competent antivirus system, but any antivirus system, they get in the way more than they can protect you. It really comes down to you practicing safe computing. I'll tell you what, when we come back, I'll talk a little bit about that. But meanwhile, for you, you've got to at least remove AVG. If that doesn't work, nuke the drive and install Windows 10 clean, which, in my opinion, is always the best way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by a new sponsor. I'm excited about this sponsor, 23andMe. 23andMe. I actually did 23andMe a couple of years ago. It's a personalized genetic service. 23 stands for your 23 pairs of chromosomes on your DNA, and it's a DNA analysis, which is so cool. Now, it doesn't require drawing blood or anything. In fact, if you sign up at 23andme.com, they'll send you a little tiny vial, and literally you just fill it with saliva, spit. You spit into it. But they can get a lot from your spit, including your ancestry, genetic traits, even health information. See how your DNA breaks. You know, I'm going to log into my 23andMe account because it's kind of fun to see. See how your DNA breaks out across 31 populations worldwide. Find out where your ancestors came from as far back as 500 years. You can go back even more farther, over thousands of years, trace parts of your ancestry to maternal and paternal haplogroups. Don't know what that means, but if you do, then you know. That's cool. that's genetics. Find out, for instance, how much Neanderthal you have in you. I have a small amount. I have less Neanderthal in me than many, apparently. That's what it says. The Health and Ancestry Service provides an even more comprehensive understanding of your genetics. You have access to all the reports available within the Ancestry Service, as well as trait reports and carrier status reports. So let me show you my ancestry. This is so cool. I think we brought the site down. It's so I'm 39% British and Irish, right? But you can go even farther. And then here, this is the coolest one, the timeline. So my grandparent or great-great-grandparent was 100% British and Irish. That's right. Likely born between 1870 and 1930. But then I can go back at previous generation, a parent, grandparent, or grandparent who was 100% British and Irish, 1879. Oh, that's the one we already saw. Then the French and German, that's the Laporte, right? Then Scandinavian, go a little farther back, Italian, Ashkenazi Jewish. I didn't know. Somebody in my family tree between 1690 and 1810 was 100% Ashkenazi Jew. Iberian, from the Iberian Peninsula. This is so cool! And because 23andMe has genotyped more than a million customers worldwide, you can even find long-lost relatives. That is kind of amazing. I can actually... we actually found a... Well, here's my Neanderthal. I have fewer Neanderthal, my 265 Neanderthal variants. That's less than 68% of 23andMe customers. I don't know what that means, but I'm pretty good. I'm down low there. You can have friends on here, and you can find relatives. I found a second cousin, and almost he's a second cousin based on genetics, but he's got the same last name as my grandma. So you know what? That's kind of cool, isn't it? This is 23andMe. How can you do this? Well, I highly encourage you, check it out at 23andme.com. It would be a great Valentine's gift, especially, you know, you're getting married maybe, and you want to, you know, share your alleles. you might want to check it out. With over 65 online genetic reports, your loved one will be sure to fall in love with their genetics and maybe yours too. 23andme.com. If you got it before Valentine's Day, that's before Tuesday, you get $20 off at 23andme.com. I love this stuff. I mean, it's just really fascinating. Why? Because it's all about you, right? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. Hour two of the Tech Guy Show, in which we converse about such myriad of topics as computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality, auto driving cars, all of that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. 888-827-5536. 888-827-5536. We have a website. I always forget to tell you about this. And it's silly because it's free, it's open, and it's a great resource because you can search it. You can find previous shows, previous questions, previous answers. It's techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Somebody, you know, in our previous call, the end of the hour, somebody's having trouble installing Windows 10, upgrading to Windows 10 because he had, I believe, because he had an antivirus running that was blocking it. And I said at the end, right before we took a break, that he should nuke the drive and reinstall Windows. And somebody in the chat room, Cosmic Ray, is saying, do you think maybe you should explain nuke the drive? Not actual use of nuclear weapons, no. What I mean is erase the drive and start over. Now, of course, if you have data on there, you got to back it up first. And the real challenge is if you have programs on there, you're going to say, oh, I don't want to reinstall my programs. But honestly, that's probably the best thing to do when you do a big operating system upgrade. Very important. And then I mentioned that the best thing to do would be not to reinstall the antivirus. I generally don't recommend them. I used to, but nowadays I feel like with Windows 10 anyway, you've got an antivirus on there. You've got any malware on there, and while it may not be the best in the world, it's adequate. And I don't want anybody to think because you've got an antivirus, you don't have to secure your system. An antivirus is not really the best way to protect yourself. One reason is because some antiviruses actually can cause you to be more vulnerable, not less. Oy. And they often cause these kinds of problems where they block legitimate things you want to do, while letting bad guys right in the door. They can't help you against, for instance, something that's widespread now called zero days. Zero days are bugs in the operating system or software you're running that are discovered and exploited it at the same time in 0 days. And as you probably realize, if you use antivirus, you're going to get up, even in Microsoft's antivirus, you're going to get updates. And those updates periodically, often every day or so, are updating the antivirus to look for the new viruses. But there's a gap between the time that the virus hits, and because viruses today spread so fast, you're very likely to get that virus before you get an update to your antivirus that will protect you against it. So now you've got the virus. And the first thing the virus will do, in most cases, is screw up your antivirus, like turn it off or even commandeer it. Use it to prevent you from fixing your system, for instance. So that and the news, even more news this week, that antiviruses often open doors to your system to bad guys. Really, I strongly encourage you. You just avoid the antivirus if you're using Windows 10. That may not be the right advice for maybe the Macintosh. Although, I think it is, but we're starting to see more and more Mac viruses. In my opinion, the best thing you can do is really, it's on your shoulders. And this is why I think people like the idea of an antivirus. Well, I'll put this software on there, let it do the job. And that's not going to do it. You need to update your system and all your software all the time. That's the number one thing. Keep your stuff up to date. And that includes not just Windows, but your browsers, Flash especially, Adobe Reader, if you use that for reading PDF files, anything that goes on the net for sure, but any software can cause a problem. If bad guys, and they're looking very hard all the time, can find a flaw in these programs, they can often exploit them to take advantage of you. And what does that mean? Well, they get something on your system, whether it's an email attachment, a link that you click, a visit to a web page that's been commandeered. This is very common. You can literally get infected by going to a web page. Sometimes a web page you've been to 100 times is a well-known site, often, but that a bad guy has managed to get bad stuff on, either because he found a flaw in that site's own security or because the site has advertising. And we've seen this happen a lot. Almost all these ad systems are automatic, so a bad guy can buy an ad, embed viruses into that ad, have it display on millions of people's computers before the company catches them. And they usually get caught within a few days, but that gives them a few days to get on your system. So even visiting a website with these, you know, dangerous ads can get you infected. If you're not up to date, keeping up to date really makes a big difference. And then, of course, don't open attachments from in email of any kind. Even I used to say from strangers, but it's not from strangers, is it? It's from people you know. It's from the IRS. It's from your boss. Those are the people you got to watch out for. Not that they came from your boss or the IRS or your friends, but just that their email was spoofed. It's called a spear phishing attack. It's targeted at you, and those are very dangerous. That's how people get ransomware generally. So be careful about where you go, what you do, what links you click. Make sure that you, keep your system up to date. Periodically check it. Probably that's a good idea. I mean, that would be one thing antiviruses are useful for, scanning. You know, again, you won't find anything brand new, but at least you will be able to find older stuff. It's a difficult world. It's a difficult world. And I just wish you luck. That's all I can say. I haven't been bit by a virus in, I don't know how many years, 5 or 10 years. I have been bit, but I haven't been bitten in a long time, and I don't use an antivirus. Chuck in Lake Havasu, Arizona. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chuck.
Good afternoon, Leo.
Afternoon.
First thing I got to say is your associate there, Heather, she is so nice and polite on the phone and everything. I think she deserves a raise.
I'm going to give her a raise right now. Heather, you get a raise. Congratulations. Here's a buck. I don't control her salary, actually. She's paid for by the radio. If I had to pay her, I would pay her a lot.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
I don't know if it shows on your computer what I'm asking. I'm blind, and my wife never seems to have enough time, you know, to go to a web page or look up something for me. And I'm looking into getting a laptop with some kind of programs on it to where I can speak to it and it'll read me back and stuff like that. I've heard of that Dragon Natural Speech.
Yeah, that's the best dictation.
Pro, but they're kind of expensive.
Yeah. And that's dictation software. So blind users often use something called a screen reader that reads you the screen. Can you see the screen at all?
No, I'm totally blind.
All right. So you want dictation software is only for, you know, telling the computer, write this down. But that's not going to get you very far because you need to hear what the menus say, what the screens are, what windows are open. And that's screen reader software. And if you think Dragon is expensive, where do you start pricing screen reader software like JAWS? Because, well, I don't know why, and I think it's almost criminal, but I guess it's because they have a limited market. They're expensive programs to develop, so they have to charge you commensurately, I guess. I also think in many cases people get help paying for these from insurance or from organizations for blind people. And so they're a little less price sensitive. I don't know, but I do think they're overpriced. There are some open source solutions, and there is built into Windows this voiceover capability, which does some of it. Now, I have to say, I am not blind, and I'm not really qualified to tell you what's good or not, but we have a lot of blind listeners, and I'm sure somebody will call in. So keep listening and make some recommendations. I think JAWS is probably the one most people use, but it is very expensive. There's Orca, which is open source. I don't know how good it is, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Generally speaking, what I would say is get some help if there's an agency like Lighthouse for the Blind or some sort of agency in your area, an independent living resource center, that kind of thing. They'll have much more.
I'm kind of working with the Arizona Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Perfect.
And then they gave me a source of computers for the blind, but they're not. They won't be back up. Their phone system's down Monday, so I have to call them on Monday.
In general, you know, I'm not an expert. I know peripherally because I've, you know, been hearing about this stuff for years. But in general, they're going to be the best source of, because what you really need is somebody who's going to come in and get it all configured and train you. Because it's going to be, how are you going to learn it if you can't see? It's hard to learn, right?
Right.
So you're going
to. The other thing is I'm trying to, because I'm just an old guy, you know, I drove trucks for years and never learned to type. And I was a hunt and pecker, you know, when I did do computers, the one I could see.
Right.
And it's hard for me to learn to, would be hard for me to learn.
Sure. So you want something you can speak to and will speak back to you. And those things exist.
Right.
And they're quite good. I mean, I know we have many blind listeners who are fully functional on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
So it is totally doable. Do you read Braille?
No.
Okay.
No, so, it's been, you know, I was in my 50s when I went blind. So
yeah, so people who are blind from birth who can read Braille, they even have Braille screens now. So it's a wild device. It's an amazing device where the bumps will come up and they can read on they can actually feel the screen. So there's lots of choices, but they have to be customized to your abilities and needs, right?
Right.
So that's why an agency is going
to be. If I want to Google something, all it does is bring you up websites.
I know. That's no good.
Tell you.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we're getting close. The good news is in the next decade, maybe even next 5 years, there will be devices, not computers, like Amazon's Echo, like Microsoft's Cortana, like Apple's Siri, like Google's Speech, where you'll be able to talk. You'll interact fully with speech.
Right.
And you should take a look at something like the Google Home or the Amazon Echo.
I have an Amazon Echo a tap.
Oh, good.
But I get a lot of this. I do not understand the question and stuff like that. And I've talked to Amazon, they have a division that's just for the Echo. And they said, well, you know, we still have to keep inputting.
They got a way to go. Yeah, it's not perfect yet. But I'm telling you, in the next, maybe not even 5 years, the next few years, we're going to see massive improvements in these. The Google Home is a little bit better at general knowledge stuff. So you can talk to it and ask it, you know, how tall is the Empire State Building, things like that. But none of them are going to replace a computer for you. Oh, thank you. I need that. Thank you,
Ben. Yeah, that, I really enjoy it. In fact, that's why I listen to you on my Echo. I'm living in Manhattan.
Nice.
I listen to you on KFI.
Nice.
In that, on the
Isn't that great?
On the tap.
Yeah. I use the Echo all the time.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah. You have to understand its limitations and just use it as, you know, to do the things it can do. But those are, you know, for listening to stuff, it's great. I use audiobooks on it. I listen to music on it. I was telling my wife last night, I said, isn't it amazing we could just now say, hey, I'd like to listen to some, she wanted to hear a police song. And you just ask it and it starts playing it. That's amazing.
Right.
So we're getting there.
And it's some of the older, you know, I had them bring up Country Joe and the Fish.
Yeah. And it's one, two, three, what are we fighting for?
That's right.
Hey, Chuck, I got to run. It's great to talk to you. Talk on Monday to that agency and keep listening.
If I go on to that labs, your tech guy labs, and that, would I be able to, if she brings it up?
Yeah, your wife can do some searching.
And see if there's any answers that you're bringing.
Have her search for screen reader.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Leo.
Great to talk to you, Chuck. Thanks for listening.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I think we're getting closer. I was talking to Chuck, of course. He's blind. He's having a hard time using a computer because he's recently blind. And as I mentioned on the air, the best thing to do is to find an agency in your area that can help you, because you're going to need somebody to help choose the stuff, set it up, configure, and train you so that you can use it. We have many blind listeners who can use computers exactly as well as a sighted listener. It's totally doable. And then we got to talking off the air about these new interfaces. He has an Amazon Echo. There's the Google Home, too. These new devices that you talk to and talk back to you. He said, I wish they could do more, because a lot of times they'll pull up a web page or something. That's not very useful because I can't read it. But they are getting better. Amazon has 1,000 people working on the Echo. And I would say in the next couple of years, we're getting very close. It's a convergence of a number of things. This is where you see big advancements in technology, is where a variety of different trends kind of converge. So one of the trends is machine learning and artificial intelligence, the ability for computers to kind of better understand what you mean when you say something, what you're looking for, what the world looks like. Computers can look at pictures and now can say, that's a dog, that's a cat. That's very helpful. That's a big trend. The ability to recognize speech, huge, and they're getting better and better at a pace that is kind of mind-boggling. I believe in that case, we're at what we call the hockey stick of an inflection point. When things are moving at an exponential rate, we're used to things moving at a kind of arithmetic rate, you know, doubling every few years, that kind of thing. Well, I guess that's more like exponential, but you know, 15% better every year, that's kind of arithmetic. A lot of technologies are geometric or exponential. Well, they'll double every year. And it doesn't take long. if you made a graph of it, you'd see they call it a hockey stick. It looks like a hockey stick lying down, where it's slow growth right up to the edge, the bend, and then boom. And I think that's they call that the inflection point. That's the point we're at right now with voice recognition. We've been making steady progress, but it's cumulative in such a way that I think it's about to go boom, where you'll be able to have kind of Star Trek-like conversations with computers. And so that's going to be a real boon for Chuck and anybody who can't see a computer, to be able to talk to it and have it talk back to you and respond to you and do reasonable things is going to be fantastic. And along with that will be the ability, in fact, you already have that ability, at least with text messaging, to say things like, well, send a text to my wife. I'm running late, but could you pick up, you know, some milk at the store or whatever, to longer and longer things. I think just a few years, you'll be able to dictate, you know, articles, stories, lengthy letters with great accuracy. And that will be a boon. And we're very close to that. Part of that convergence, of course, high-speed internet, the widely available high-speed internet, because all of this stuff still has to be, is not happening locally. Your Echo isn't that smart. It's actually kind of a simple computer, but it sends it over the high-speed internet link. It sends your audio back It understands it out there on Amazon servers and formulates a response and sends that back over the same high-speed link. And you can see why a high-speed link's important, because it responds almost in real time. It is like you're having a conversation. There's a slight pause, and then it goes, well, here's what I found. That's pretty amazing. You also have the convergence of hardware. And this is really what's powered the technology revolution. Getting better, better and better and less expensive. That's kind of not how things work. We're kind of used to, you know, things getting better, like cars getting better, but more expensive. And they're getting better at a slower rate. Digital technology kind of flips that on its head. It gets smaller, faster, and it costs less. This is Moore's Law. Gordon Moore, the famous engineer, one of the founders of Intel, coined this law 40 years ago, saying he guessed, and at the time it was a guess, that the number of transistors that they could put into a chip, and you could roughly equate that to the power, the abilities of the chip, would double every 18 months. That seemed at the time, that seemed like an incredible, no, come on, double every 18 months? What are you, nuts? you only have to do the math, think about it a little bit to realize if it doubles in a year and a half and doubles again, it's four times better in 3 years. It's eight times better in 4.5 years. It doubling means, in 40 years, it's doubled every 18 months. He was right. That's why they call it Moore's Law. And that's empowered a huge amount of progress. So in that Amazon Echo, I said it's not very bright, but it is actually, given what it is, it's quite bright. And the fact that you can get it now, you can get a Dot, which has all the capabilities of an Echo minus the big speaker, for $50, that's remarkable. And that's the other convergence that you're seeing. So all these technologies, all these things happening all at once, big data, high-speed internet, artificial intelligence, low-cost hardware, are combining to bring us to a very fascinating inflection point, new world. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. I'm sorry about the sermon, the monologue. Charles is in Vienna, Virginia, home of You've Got Mail.
Hi, Charles. Leo.
Good to talk to you.
You too. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Love your show.
Thank you.
On following your lead, I own a Chromebook and a Nexus 7. A couple of weeks ago.
Wow. Good for you.
And I've been very happy with both of them. A couple of weeks ago, curious little icon popped up on the Nexus 7. It's an exclamation point inside of a small triangle.
Never good.
Next to a Google G.
Yeah.
And when I swipe on it, I get a prompt that says action required, and it's above my Gmail address. And then when I tap on that, it says please sign in. A change in your account requires that you sign in again.
Yeah.
I'm little suspicious of that.
Yeah. You're right to be. And so the best thing to do is then to go actually check on your Chromebook your Google settings.
Everything on the Chromebook is working fine. When I try to open Docs, Gmail, Maps, Drive, all of that, it works fine on the Chromebook. But when I try to open any of those things on the Nexus, it wants me to sign in.
Yeah. So what I want you to do is on your browser, on Chrome, on your Chromebook, do Google's security checkup.
Okay.
And you will have to sign in to do this, but obviously your password hasn't changed and all of that, I hope. It'll let you know, believe me. Run the security checkup. There's lots of reasons you could get that. And in the security checkup, and everybody with a Google account should do this, it will verify that you have a recovery phone, a recovery email, and a security question. You'll be able to check what devices are connected. That's really valuable, because you can see if somebody's using your Google account, you'll see who's using it. You'll see all the devices connected to your Google account. And you'll have a chance to say either looks good or something looks wrong. You can check your account permissions, your passwords, your two-step verification settings. Google created this last year to help people secure their Google accounts. So whenever you see anything, or even just once in a while, go through. You could Google security checkup, and it'll take you right to the place. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been everywhere, my friends. Johnny Jett, our travel guru, joins us each and every week to talk about using technology to travel better. You'll find him at johnnyjett.com on the Twitter and on the Instagram at Johnny Jett. Hello, Johnny. How are you?
Hello. Good. How you doing?
I am well. You're in your brand new basement studio.
I sure am.
With a map of the world. Have you put push pins in all the places you've been to?
I have not on this one. On other ones I have.
Yeah.
But this one, it's going to take a while.
Yeah. How many would you estimate? How many hundreds have you been to? How many countries have you been to? Have you ever counted that up?
Well, there's 196 sovereign countries.
Okay.
Or is it 193? It keeps changing and I keep, but I've been to maybe 100.
Wow.
So I have some work to do.
There is a guy who's been to all of them, isn't there?
Actually, CNN just did a story on a girl I know from Connecticut where I grew up. She is now the first female and the fastest person, period, to travel to every single sovereign nation.
It's challenging because like Saudi Arabia, it's very hard to get into places like that.
Saudi's not as difficult as some of the African nations.
Okay, yeah.
But and one of my good buddies, Ali Abamante, he's been every country. He was the youngest American to every country in the world, but now she's just beat him because she's 27.
Wow, that's a good bucket list item. Although one has to think that it gets to the point where it's more about collecting countries than actually seeing the countries, right?
Correct. And actually, three of the people who've been to every single country in the world grew up near where I grew up in Fairfield County,
wow.
Connecticut.
Something about Connecticut makes people want to just get out of there.
And only 100 people in the world have been to every single country in the world.
That's pretty amazing. So what do you got for us this year?
So I got a good website for you.
All right.
So I don't know if you're guilty, but I definitely am. That, you know, my New Year's resolution was to get in better shape. And, you know, when you travel a lot, you seem to, you know, it goes to the wayside. But here's a website and an app that really gives you no excuse not to work out while you're on the road. It's called 7-Minute Workout. So the website is 7-min.com. So check it out. It's probably the most simple website you will ever see. All you got to do is press the start button. And it gives you these different exercises to do for 30 seconds. And it gives you like a 9-second break. And
so the whole theory of this is that many short, high-intensity sessions are better than one long session, right? 1 hour
correct.
On the treadmill. It's better to do a couple of 7 minutes. And who could? And these are all like body weight workouts, right? You don't need to equip.
Yeah, this is everything you can do in your hotel room.
Yeah. Jumping jacks. So, okay, everybody now.
Jumping jacks is the first one. And then it'll be like a wall sit or push-ups.
That's
so
cool.
It's an app and a website, but it's so simple. I mean, it's almost a joke that it's so simple.
You can do this on your Amazon Echo. There's a 7-minute workout skill that'll walk you through it if you don't want to look at anything.
And it's 7 minutes as well?
Yeah, it's the same. And Johnson & Johnson has a great app for the iPhone, 7-minute workout. It's all the same idea. High intensity, quick workout. And then you rest for brief periods. So we're resting after our jumping jacks. Nice job on those, by the way. You didn't even get out of breath. And now, wall sit.
Wall sit.
For 30 seconds.
This was my favorite one in lacrosse practice. I played lacrosse in college.
Good for your quads, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This will get you in shape or keep you in shape.
Yeah.
Especially when you're on the road again, because you know, it's very difficult. I actually lost about, I think, 7 pounds because I slowed my travels down once we had our son.
Well, you know, the other problem for me with traveling is eating out.
That's my problem, especially when you're getting wined and dined all around the world.
Yeah.
And they're like,
and restaurant
you
meals
need to try
are
this.
So fattening. I mean, they're so much higher calorie than what you'd make at home. All right. Sure. We're resting. You're now we're going to do, you ready? Push-ups, Johnny.
Yeah.
30 seconds of push-ups.
I used to do 700.
What?
But
crazy.
These days, crazy. I can't.
Yeah.
So all right, so I got an app for you, too.
Yes.
And this one's called Road Trippers. So we're actually taking Jack on his first road trip this week.
Where are you going?
And so I'm gonna try this.
Jack, how old is Jack? He's 3 months?
Jack is almost 5 months.
5 months? Wow.
Yep, it's going to be his first time in a hotel. So that's going to be interesting.
Baby's
I feel bad for the people
hotel.
Next door to us.
Aww. So where can I go to plan my road trip?
So the website for this one is roadtrippers.com.
Okay.
And then, but it's an app as well for Android and iOS. It's free. And it's only for U.S. road trips, but it will tell you all the interesting places to go, especially like local diners, scenic points, national parks, you know, even quirky roadside attractions. So there's so many resources out there, but this is a great one. I mean, I still prefer to ask my friends on Facebook or Twitter, what do they recommend? But, you know, if you need some more advice, I would give this one a shot.
I think here's the one Scott Wilkinson's doing right now. It's Road Trip Through Big Sur on Highway 1. One of my favorite trips of all time. This is really cool. Roadtrippers.com. It's free, right?
It sure is.
Love, Liberty, and Cheesesteaks, 48 hours in Philly. I love it.
I'm actually speaking in Philadelphia March 25th, I think, and I'm speaking in L.A. at the L.A. Travel Show next week, next Sunday, and I'll be speaking in San Diego the following week, by the way, for the L.A.
And this
Travel
is this where
you're
bringing Jack to all of these?
He'll go to a couple. Yeah. He'll go to the L.A., possibly the San Diego one.
He's a lucky kid. He's going to get to 100 countries before he's 21, I bet you.
You know, we're thinking about that, but my wife won't do it.
She won't do it? No. She's a traveler?
But anyway, I got a good tip for you if we have time.
We do.
Okay, so I was supposed to go see you last weekend, if you remember.
I know.
And I had to cancel at the last minute.
Yeah.
So I booked on American Airlines. Okay. And if you change your fee, if you cancel your ticket, they charge you $200 for domestic tickets. So does Delta and United. So that's why you want to fly Southwest, because they don't charge a change fee. JetBlue charges only $70. But, you know, for the people who do book on the major carriers, I don't like to cancel my ticket until the very last minute. So what I did, because if there's weather delays or the flight is delayed by an hour, you can get your money back, or if it's canceled. So if you know you're going to cancel a month out and you just cancel it, you're really just throwing $200 down the drain, because there is a chance it could be delayed. And what I did, I have elite status, so I can change my ticket for same day for free. So I booked it to the very last flight of the night to San Francisco. And I was like, those flights are almost always delayed. And sure enough, it was delayed by an hour. And once it was delayed, I called them right up. I got my $288 back.
Now, you don't have to be elite, global elite, to do that, to get the money back?
No, but to change your same day.
Right.
You do.
So if you didn't have that status, you'd have to go out on the last flight of the night. But at least you were able to cancel and get your money back because it was delayed.
Right. And another thing is, when you book far in advance, if you book far in advance, a lot of airlines change their times, even by just a few minutes. And when they do that, then you can call up and get them to change either your routing or your times, or even try and get a refund.
Well, this is good to know. So if a flight is delayed more than an hour, is this just American or is this all airlines?
Well, this is definitely for American, but most of the carriers
check.
Are the same.
Check.
Always check. Even if it's 5 minutes, you should check. Just say, I'm going to miss a meeting or whatever it is.
And then you might be able to get your money back. And if it changes the time by a few minutes, you should be able to change flights without a fee.
For example, 2 years ago, I bought a ticket for $1 from L.A. to Copenhagen via New York and London. I called up once I saw they changed the time by, I think it was 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I said, hey, can I avoid going to New York? They said, sure, we'll put you on the nonstop from L.A. to London to Copenhagen. So I avoided the stop in New York.
Wow.
And the reason why I booked it through New York, because that ticket was $1.
The
other ticket was $1,000.
Yeah, take the dollar. Well, you see, this is why you got to go to johnnyjet.com. He also has a great travel deals newsletter, a bunch of newsletters. If you follow him on Twitter, there's some great lists there, and he has all sorts of stuff. In fact, all the links to what he just mentioned will be up on his Twitter account, JohnnyJet.
I wrote about this in my daily tip newsletter this week, so you can
just
search it.
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
Thank you. Johnny Jet, thank you so much. Safe travels. We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come. More calls right after this. That's a good one. I love that. That's how to travel like a rock star.
I meant to mention it last week, but I didn't. We ran out of time.
That's a good tip. This is fun. I love this. This Road Trippers.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I think these days, people probably don't want to leave the country because they might not get that back in. So it'd be good to do a little road tripping around the U.S. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK. Leo, 888-827-5536. The website where we put everything, including Johnny Jet's picks and all the answers and links that you hear on the show, The website is techguylabs.com. Free, open, no sign up. And every question, every answer, even audio and video of every show is up there. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's go to Turlock. Lorne is on the line. Hi, Lorne. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. Wow, finally got through to you.
Sorry it took so long.
86 BFG.
Well, nice to see you. What can I do for you?
Well, I got a problem. I'm hard of hearing, and I have DirecTV on my Samsung HD television.
Yeah.
And I use a headset, and the only place that I can plug it in is on the audio out on the DirecTV box. That works great on anything I watch, except when I'm streaming Netflix or Amazon videos. The headphone, I have no way that I can hear through those headphones.
Because you're streaming it not from the cable box, but from the TV itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
So there are a couple of solutions to that. Your TV and most TVs have something called a ARC port, audio return channel port. So look, make sure you're using the HDMI port that is audio return enabled, because that'll send audio back into the set-top box. And one hopes that the set-top box will do something appropriate with it. The reason that is a lot of people don't use their TV for the audio. They use the set-top box. And so if you're watching something that's coming only from the TV, like your smart TV streaming channels, you need to get that audio back. That's the audio return channel. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is take the audio from the optical port of your TV into your headphones. I don't know if you can do that, but the TV itself has audio coming out of it, usually in an optical port. I think all the Samsungs do that.
Well, that I do have a soundbar hooked up to my audio port.
Oh, you already do? Okay.
Yeah.
The TV doesn't have a headphone jack anymore, huh? I think they pretty much phased those out.
And, you know, I thought about a solution, and I've been looking around. I said, don't they make a soundbar that has audio out?
An audio jack, yeah. Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, but they don't.
They don't.
Yeah.
Well, they say, why do you need that?
Yeah, exactly. I'll look into that.
Yeah, I think the audio return, it's... I wish I'd give you very specific instructions on how to do that, but all I can do is kind of point the way. It's the ARC channel. Almost all TVs, I know my Samsung, have labeled on the TV, and it's not necessarily HDMI 1, the one you would normally use. It might be HDMI 2, but it'll be labeled ARC, audio return channel. You use that port with your cable box, and that means your DirecTV box. The DirecTV box now is receiving... And it's specifically designed exactly for this. It's receiving the audio that the TV's playing because the TV's generating the signal now, not the cable, not the DirecTV box. And it should, if you're listening on the headphones on the cable, on the satellite box, if you're listening on those headphones, it should put that audio into the headphones.
So all I would do is unplug the...
Just change your HDMI to the ARC port. And that should work. We'll see. I mean, I can't promise it does, but that's the idea. That's the theory behind audio return channels. Let's see. What else could you do?
Have such a thing?
Pardon me?
Do all TVs have such a thing?
Yeah, I think so. All smart TVs do because of this very problem. If you're watching Netflix and the TV has the Netflix, how do you get that audio back into your system? You're not using the...
Okay, but will that kill my soundbar?
Shouldn't.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Shouldn't. And you don't have any other output from the TV, like those red, white, and yellow ports or anything like that?
Yeah, I do. And I tried that, and it didn't work. I couldn't get any audio out of it.
Yeah, the problem is you might get the Netflix, but you then wouldn't get anything from DirecTV, probably.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer there.
You may also have to look at the setup in your TV's menus, you know, to make sure that you're using the audio return channel, et cetera, et cetera. So thanks to the chat room, Marsworm in the chat room has given me a link to a website called Song Simeon. Song Simeon. It's music going ape for music. And it has an article, best sound bars with headphone jacks or wireless headphones. So apparently there are a few. I don't know how old this article is, but that might be. I hate for you to have to go out and buy another sound bar, but I would try the ARC first. But yeah, there's a Dell, there's a Go Groove, Samsung actually makes a sound bar, 2016 model, that has a audio jack. So does Vizio. So I guess they're out there. Yeah. Not that I mean, that doesn't seem like the best solution, but that's at least one option.
Well, it's a possible solution. What I'm going to do, I'm so happy you answered this question, I'm going to send you a contribution. Taste of champagne or something.
Oh, you're sweet. Just send me good wishes. We get plenty of contributions from our fine sponsors. That's what keeps this afloat. I really love the idea. You know, there's everybody's in the internet there. We're all trying to solve this question of, well, how do you monetize? That's the kind of creepy word that internet people use for make money, make a living. And there's all sorts of ways to do it, paywalls and, you know, but I'm a fan, having worked in radio for my whole life, of advertising-supported free media. And we're fortunate that we have great advertisers. I think we're very clear when it's advertising, when it's not advertising. And I want to muddy the waters there. But I think that works well. It means everybody can listen for free. And your contribution is listening. That's a contribution.
Well, there you go.
The advertisers are glad that you're listening. And if you ever hear something you think you might want, try it.
I will.
Thank you.
W6BFG, by the way.
W6TWT, 73, my friend.
All right.
Get you later, take
my
care.
Friend.
That was that arcane exchange at the end there was a couple of amateur radio enthusiasts trading off call letters. It's fun. It may be that you have to get those yellow and white and red jacks, those ports on the back of the TV. Yellow is video, and red and white are left and right audio. It may be to get those working, you have to go into the menu of the TV and turn them on. It might have, and unfortunately, there's no standard for describing this in the menu. It might be send to speakers, external speakers, I don't know. But there ought to be a way to do it. It ought to be somehow a way to do that. My mom does that. I sent her some great Sennheiser headphones. She plugs in the back of the TV, and it's you know, it's a real boon if you're hard of hearing, especially because if there's other people in the house, and you just tend to turn up the TV to the point where it hurts them. You can hear it, but it's painful, and so having headphones is a nice compromise. Ray in Playa del Rey, California. Hi, Ray. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo,
hey.
Happy Lunar New Year, sir.
Happy Lunar Gong Hei Fat Choi.
Very good, very good. I didn't know if anybody had wished you New Year yet.
You're the first. The big parade is in San Francisco tonight.
Oh, man, I'd love to be there.
Yeah, that's fun. The firecrackers and the dragons dancing.
The lion dance, dragon.
Yeah, I love those. Oh, it's so fun.
It's raining, right?
No, I think the lunar gods are smiling upon us. The sun has come out. And
cool.
I think for the first time in several weeks, it's going to be a dry night.
The Chinese culture is great.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I was a Chinese major in college. And here's the good news. We may all be learning more about the Chinese culture in the next few years. what can I do for you?
Well, I really wanted to thank you for all that you do.
Thank you.
You are an invaluable asset to the entire world.
Thank you. You're very kind.
And you do it with great attitude, great kindness, great heart.
Oh,
and I want to really express that to you. You're a rare pearl.
Thank you.
I have a super low-tech problem, but it's also very very Leo Laporte-centric. I have a problem listening to your show. I have to listen to it in my car, basically. Because I live in a duplex and on the lower level, and I cannot get a decent AM signal.
That really reminds me of my youth.
I love KFI. I love the shows, but I cannot get it. And I don't know if I have to drill a hole in the wall, stick an antenna on the roof, or what do I got to do?
Actually, I'm fond of this because my dad and I, when I was a kid, used to get in the car because it was the only place we could hear the distant signal that was playing old-time radio shows, and we would listen to The Shadow and The Lone Ranger together.
Yeah.
And it's still a very fond memory. It's probably why I'm in radio, I would guess. There are solutions to this. First of all, we put our show over the internet. So anywhere you can listen to the internet, you can get the show.
Okay.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't think there's a way to get KFI to come in better in your car. But that's one solution anyway. I'll tell you more when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't know. You know, I mean, I have seen people put better antennas in their car. Not sure you want to do that. You know, those whip antennas?
My car's fine. It's in my house.
So you say you go and get in your car to listen. I get it.
My car so I can hear you. And then, yeah. then I sit in my car in the driveway to finish off a show because I can't get it in.
Oh, well, I'll tell you how to fix this. You can fix this in your house. But,
oh, cool.
And I'm sure KFI would prefer I tell you that instead of you can hear the whole thing on the internet anytime you want. Because the show is heard all over the country. It's syndicated. And we stream audio and video of the show from our website, twit.tv, from YouTube, youtube.com/twit. You can also, if you have an Amazon Echo, you can listen to it on TuneIn. You can listen to it on your phone.
I'm so low tech. It's really pathetic.
I mean, do you have a smartphone?
I'm fortunate enough to have Wi-Fi. Yeah, I'm talking to you on my phone right
okay.
now.
Okay, and it's a smartphone?
Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Is it Apple or Android?
It's an Android.
Okay. So you can get iHeartRadio, which is KFI is part of Clear Channel. That's Clear Channel's free app that will have the show on it, I believe. You can also get TuneIn. That's another internet radio app for your phone that you can listen to this show and tens of thousands of other stations on.
Okay.
And then, there's two ways.
I have this great stereo at home, big expensive speakers and all that.
Oh, yeah. So what I was going to say is you can get a better AM. You can get a better AM antenna. You know, the way AM antennas work is silly. These are, you've probably seen it. It's a copper wire coiled over a core is your antenna. Okay. And it's the right length to receive the AM band. But you can, and usually they're buried inside the receiver. Sometimes they'll give you one that you can externalize. And even that would be better because if you get an external AM antenna, and AM is different than FM, but an external AM antenna, you can then position it because it has to be positioned perpendicular. Let's see, is it parallel or perpendicular to the radio waves? I think it's parallel to the radio waves. So if you I don't know, you remember this when you were a kid, if you turn the radio you get better reception.
Yeah, sure.
So that's why the coil has to be aligned with the radio waves. So it's a ferrite core. That's right.
Is there a powered antenna?
There are, and if you go to ccrane.com. Ccrane.com. Yeah.
I've looked at it.
They're wonderful. They sell every possible radio doohickey, including powered AM antennas for weak signals.
So if Ccrane says they've got the super deluxe deal, I should go for that?
Yeah, I trust them.
Okay.
And then another thought, you've got Wi-Fi. For $50, you can get an Amazon Dot, hook that up to your stereo, and then you can say, hey, Echo, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn, and you can listen to us.
So that's a whole lot easier than wiring everything up, huh?
That's how I'd do it. I mean, KFI would prefer you do the first one because then you'd get all their ads. If you listen to...
Like a Best Buy deal or something? Or no, through Amazon.
Amazon, yeah. I don't know if you still have to have an Amazon Prime account. You might have to. But check it out anyway. $50 is very inexpensive.
Okay. Yeah. What's DOT stand for?
Nothing. It's a dot. It stands for.
I've heard it referred to.
It's their Amazon Echo. So they you can buy Echo in.
Yeah, I've heard of the Echo.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing. It's just a little Echo without a speaker. You should get it. If you have Wi-Fi and a stereo, it's the best stereo adjunct because then you can say things like listen to Christmas music and it will play through your stereo. You talk to your stereo.
And then I just plug it into the stereo.
Yeah, it has a little jack, a wire that goes into your stereo.
For the speakers. Excellent.
I mean, that's a great way to do it. Ccrane apparently has a DIY, how to make a simple, powerful AM loop antenna for free. So if you don't want to spend any money, you can build your own. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, Amazon Echo, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We were talking about the Amazon Dot. I thought maybe because there seems to be some question about what these things are, I could give you the lowdown on the Amazon voice services devices. How about that? There are three right now, but there are many more coming from other companies besides Amazon, companies that are using the Amazon technology, TVs, cars, refrigerators. It's everywhere. You can even build your own Amazon voice services device using a Raspberry Pi. They make the software freely available. So it's a simple thing to do. And it's an amazing thing. And I think, you know, those of us who got them when it first came out 2 years ago, it's been 2 years since the Echo emerged, the early adopters, the early people on board, all became fanatics and evangelists. Have you tried this? It's amazing. And, you know, I don't think it was a lot of people. It may still not be a lot of people, maybe a few million. It's hard to tell because Amazon doesn't release numbers. But as now, I think more and more people, partly because they were advertising on the Super Bowl and everywhere else, but more and more people understand that there's something out there you can talk to and it will do things. It will play music or it'll be a kitchen timer or, you know, it'll read you poems or make songs or, you know, do things by voice command alone. The underlying service, Amazon Voice Services, is fairly capable and getting better all the time. It's much like Siri, if you have an iPhone, or Google has a speech. Samsung has its nuance-based speech where you can talk to it. Of course, Microsoft has Cortana, and you can talk to it and it'll answer. But the nice thing about the Amazon stuff is it doesn't need a computer. It does need internet, it needs Wi-Fi, but it doesn't need a computer. And it's gradually becoming kind of a voice-activated computer replacement. So they originally started selling with about a foot-high black cylinder. Inside, it had a series of seven array microphones. That was the secret sauce, because it could hear you in a normal tone of voice across the room and understand, more importantly, unless you're Scottish, in which case it can't hear a thing. Doesn't do... No voice... This is the joke of it, but no voice... Apparently, no voice device works if you have a Scottish accent. It can't understand a thing. But if you don't talk like the what's his name from Star Trek, James Doohan from Star Trek, if you don't talk like, "Captain, the dilithium crystals are cracked," if you don't talk like that, they're pretty good. You can speak to them and you can say things like, now it has trigger words. There's four of them. Most people use a word, well, I don't want to say it out loud, A-L-E-X-A. It's a lady's name, right? We think of it as, you know, that's the device. But you could also, if you choose, using the app that you run on your phone or tablet, you could choose computer, which it's not a good choice, because at least for me, I say that word a lot, Echo, or Amazon, in addition. So you say one of those words, and that's the trigger word. That gets the thing listening. And then you could say other things, lots of them. In fact, there's, at last count, 7,000 skills. You have to enable skills, but things like play a game of Jeopardy or 20 questions or tell a joke, make embarrassing rude noises. That kind of, yes, there is one. Several, probably. That's the kind of thing you can do with it. Now, the big, tall cylinder still is available. Initially, it was only available to people who were Amazon subscribers through Amazon's Prime service. And it was $200. It was expensive. But they've released several other form factors. There's the Tap, which I don't really understand. It's, I guess, to bring to the beach, but you'd have to have Wi-Fi. It's got a battery in it, a speaker battery. And the Tap is called the Tap because you press the button. Instead of saying, "Hey, Echo," you just press the button and then speak to it. Now, the funny thing is, today, of all things, they updated the Tap so that you don't have to tap it anymore. It now responds just like the other Echo devices. But my favorite is the Dot, because for one thing, it's the lowest cost. It's only $50. And it's as if you sliced the top of that black cylinder off, got rid of the big speaker. There's still a little tinny speaker on it. And it has all the other capabilities of an Amazon Echo. You could talk to it. It listens. All of that built in. And the Dot's market is really people who want to attach it to a stereo or a set of powered speakers, because, I mean, it's really amazing on a stereo, because now you can talk to your stereo. You could say, Echo, listen to the Beatles, and it'll start playing Beatles music. You could say, we use it in the kitchen. I think that's where a lot of people first used Amazon's Echo, as a kitchen timer. And you could set multiple timers. And there's competition now. Google has its Google Home device. I think the Echo is really the driving factor here. Amazon really found a market. And, of course, being the original, it's 2 years old now. It's got a lot more capabilities than anything else. And it's remarkable, all things you can have it. I have it read books to me because I have an Audible account, and Amazon also owns that audiobook store, Audible. So it works with that. Amazon announced a few months ago a music service, Amazon Unlimited. It's only $5 a month if you use it on a single Echo. And it's, you know, like Spotify or Apple Music. It has that same kind of roughly the same 30 million songs. Prince will be back tomorrow. All of Prince's music will be back on it. So the Dot's nice because it's a way to kind of get your feet wet without spending a huge amount of money. Not $200, although that price has fallen now. But the Dot itself is only $50, and on Black Friday it was $40. So I ended up buying quite a few of them. It's a really interesting device, and there are few of us who've had Echo long enough that we have more than one. I keep putting them in more rooms at my house because I want the house to respond to me. If you've tied it into your home automation, if you use home automation from a variety of manufacturers, Wemo, SmartThings, a few others, you can say to your Echo, turn on the lights or make it look like sunset or close the garage door, lock the front door. You can actually interact with your home. And I think that actually is a very important next step in getting home automation, you know, off the ground. It's been really too complicated, too tricky. But as it gets easier, having voice control, man, now we're talking Star Trek, right? I can even, I have a Tesla, but if you have an automatic, you can actually ask the Echo how much gas is in the car. You can, I mean, it's kind of amazing. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk about this brave new world and how to navigate it, how to actually use it. And as Dr. Mom points out, she's an Echo fan. Echo is really important for people with limited mobility because now, and I got my mom one. In fact, I got my mom one for the living room, and then she wanted one for the studio. She wants more because you don't have to get up. You know, if it's hard to get around, you can talk to your house and control it. Answer the door, turn on the lights. Calculate pi to the last digit. What? Can you? I had to mute. I would talk to my Echo, but I had to mute it because I set it to respond to the trigger phrase computer because I thought it'd be like cool, like Star Trek. Hello, computer. And then I realized I say the word computer maybe a little more than the average bear, and it was triggering all the time. So now it's just sitting there muted. There's a little button on the Echo that you tap that, it stops listening. And I think for a lot of people, that is important because I think people are afraid that that's always listening to you, the Echo. And I would point out that it's no different than your smartphone, which is also has a speaker and some additional features like a camera and GPS. So it's if you're already carrying around probably a number of microphones. I've given up on privacy, obviously. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's get back to the phones. More of your calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, computer. Hello, computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. And back to the phones we go. Frederick in Detroit, the Motor City. Hello, Frederick. Uh-oh. Are you there?
Hello. I'm hey. Here. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Welcome.
Hello. Hello, Leah. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Yes. So let's get to the point. Basically, I have MacBook Air.
Okay.
You know, when you log on to Wi-Fi network in one of those free little Starbucks or whatever.
Yeah.
You connect it for free.
Yeah.
Without any login, without any authentication.
Yeah.
When you open up a browser, you get a secondary login page, whether it's like other, you know, agreed terms and conditions or whatnot. So I don't get that. I just connect to the Wi-Fi network. And no matter what browser you use, Chrome, Safari, or...
Yeah. So I'll explain how this works. And actually, you need the cooperation of Apple. In fact, if you look at the browser, you'll notice that the website is captive.apple.com. So what you've got there is what they call a captive portal. And every platform, Android, iOS, Windows, Mac, they all support this. And it's in order to use an open access point, that requires you to sign in, whether you have to just merely agree that, you know, you're going to follow their terms of service, or you actually have to give them in a hotel, you might have to give them your room number and last name.
Exactly.
That's all called a captive portal, and it is done in cooperation with that open Wi-Fi access point and your hardware manufacturer. They force it, and it's really a terrible system. It actually, in order to work, has to kind of break the way the internet works. But but long ago, this was created because, you know, Starbucks and the Marriott and everybody wanted you to be able to log in without a password on the one hand, right?
Right.
And that would be, by the way, much safer. It's better if you go somewhere, airport lounges do this now, and they say, oh, and if you want to use our Wi-Fi, here's the password. That's actually much more secure and you won't get the captive portal pop-up.
Right.
But this is how they handle it. It's kind of in the tech industry, the technical term is a kludge. It's kind of an ugly solution for a problem of how to use open Wi-Fi access points without a password, but still get you to sign a terms of service or something like that.
So how do I reset it? Because I don't get that secondary.
You just got to be patient because it doesn't always work. That's all. If you're an impatient person, as many of us are, you'll immediately try to do stuff and you can't. What you have to do is join the Wi-Fi access point and then just wait. And sometimes it takes 30 seconds to a minute for the phone to say, it's a captive portal. Oh, I got to go to captive.apple.com. If you want, you could try this in the browser. Go to captive.apple.com.
Captive.apple.com.
Yeah, and then the full, I think that's probably sufficient. But if you need it even longer, it could be /hotspot-detect .html. And what this is doing, and this is only on an iPhone. An Android device, you'd do something else. But on an iPhone, this is saying to the iPhone.
I have MacBook Air with OS.
Same thing. Air, iPhone. Sometimes Dr. Mom says you can go to 1.1.1.1. That will activate the portal.
Okay.
So, and then worst case, maybe you've joined this before and it thinks that you're already on. If that's the case, forget that Wi-Fi access point. You know, you could do that by going into the Wi-Fi settings and selecting the Wi-Fi access point and clicking the little I button, the info button, and say, forget this. In other words, that resets the whole thing. And then it should pop up, but you just have to be patient. It takes 30 seconds sometimes. Somebody in the chat room is saying it once took 7 minutes for him. That's ridiculous.
Oh.
Isn't that? So if it really is taking more than a minute, try 1.1.1.1 or captive.apple.com.
Got it.
Okay?
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
You're welcome. This is a sore point for internet experts. They hate this captive portal solution. It's just not good. And it's just a compromise so that you could have an open access spot and still get somebody to sign a terms of service or give you a password or even give you money. There are some security issues, but there are security issues around open Wi-Fi in general. So, I mean, I don't want to get started on all of that. What I generally say is if you want to use an open Wi-Fi access point, it would be worth getting a VPN or better yet, a little router a travel router that you have the router join the open Wi-Fi access point. And then you go through that router because that router will protect you against attacks on that network. See, if you're sitting in a cafe and you're on a Wi-Fi, open Wi-Fi, you're not alone. Everybody in that cafe using that Wi-Fi is on the same network as you. And a bad guy with appropriate hardware can take advantage of that. Not necessarily see into your computer. One hopes not. But he might be able to see enough to spoof you, for instance. One attack, which doesn't require access to your computer, doesn't require the ability to get into your computer, merely to see it on the network. One attack is to, you can query the computer, what access points are you aware of or familiar of? And your home access point, for instance, will be one of those. The bad guy then sets his special router, he's got some special hardware, to have the same name as your home Wi-Fi access point. Now, what does your phone or your computer do when it sees your home Wi-Fi? It just joins it automatically, right? Doesn't ask you, doesn't do anything, just joins it. Well, the bad guy's hoping that by spoofing that name, your computer will go, oh, I'm home. Join his network. Now he does have access into your system because you're no longer on the Starbucks Wi-Fi. You're on his Wi-Fi, and he has full access to what you're doing. So there's also, that's one of many attacks that are available to somebody with less scruples than you and me on an open Wi-Fi access point. And it's one of the reasons I prefer to use if you can use a router, he won't be able to do that because he won't see your computer. He'll just see your router. It doesn't know anything. Better yet, I use something called the Tiny Hardware Firewall, which actually turns on a VPN and protects me fully on any Wi-Fi access point. It slows you down. And you have to pay a fee, usually, for these VPN services. But it's not too expensive, and boy, it sure is a better than getting hacked. 8888 asked Leo, glad you called and asked about that. Captive portals, how do those work? And the reason I would prefer it if they had a WPA2 password, if they go, you know, as they do often in airport lounges, here's the password, log in. Some smaller hotels do that too. That is actually more secure because now you're on an encrypted network. Of course, the bad guy still can check into the hotel and get the password and still try to attack you. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website, techguylabs.com. And yes, Google Assistant will allow you to use a Google VPN going through Google's site for free. That does protect you. Google's doing a lot of good in that regard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Greg is in Orange County. He's our next caller. Hi, Greg.
Hello, Leo. Welcome. We had a Chromebook before they were cool, I think. But we have always had a problem with, I don't know if it's compatibility. It doesn't open certain Word files and doesn't seem to open any PDFs. And when we first got it, it's been a few years, I just thought, oh, well, they don't do that.
No, they do, though.
Yeah, well, I hear that now you talk about them. There's no real sacrifices. So
yeah. Huh.
All right.
You keep it up to date. I mean, you don't have a choice. It updates automatically. And maybe you have such an old one that you're missing some capabilities. You're logged into a Google account, right?
Yes.
So the way it handles PDFs, Google Drive has a PDF reader. So if you open a PDF, it will open in Google Drive in their PDF reader. And the way it handles Word documents, kind of similarly, Google Docs will interpret Word documents. But, you know, a better even way to open Word documents might be using Microsoft's own free web-based Office. So Microsoft has Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint for the web. It's free. And if you open the file from that site, it will be just like you're using Word. It doesn't have all the capabilities of Microsoft Word, but at least it will have the look and feel you're used to. And the truth is, most people use a scant 5% of all the capabilities built into these programs. You know, most of the capabilities are specialty, you know, things that normal people don't use that often.
Well, these are, I don't know the word. These are Word files that have been made into forms that people fill out.
Some of that may not work. That's possible. And what you should do is tell those people, by the way, it's office.live.com for the live version of Word, Excel, PowerPoint. You should tell those people, you know, you are putting it in a format that requires somebody to buy a $500 program. That's not how you should be doing it. Right?
Yeah, we get a big black square.
I don't understand why, and I see this all the time, people assume that everybody has Microsoft Office. That's not the case. It's a dopey thing to assume. Similarly, if you use special features from Adobe's Acrobat that require you to buy Adobe or use Adobe Reader, that's leaving people out as well. So it is possible, certainly, it is possible for somebody to create a form that you can't read on a Chromebook. That is absolutely the case. But it requires special effort on their part and an unusual lack of, well, mostly I would say it's probably a lack of knowledge.
Well, they're being read on a standard laptop.
They're assuming that everybody has Microsoft Office. That's a dumb thing to assume.
Let me say that I open them fine with LibreOffice on the laptop.
Libre is great. Libre is a great solution. So, but you need to have a full operating system. I don't have a Chromebook sitting in front of me. Or I'd say send me a link or let me know where these files are, and I could tell you. But it is possible if it's a fillable form, that is not a standard format of PDF. It's not a standard PDF. It's an Adobe extension. And so they're assuming that everybody's using Windows and could just open it with an Adobe. You just download Acrobat Reader. And that's really not a fair assumption. Is it a government office or is it just a local business? Or
no, these are templates used with the business. And the PDFs were not the forms. It was the Word file that just had fillable blanks in it.
Well, try opening it at Word Online, which is live.office.com. See, you don't have to have you don't have to pay for it or anything, and it's a fairly capable version of Microsoft Word.
And if we're getting big black blocks for when we open,
that's the incompatibility.
There's something wrong with
it. Yeah, well, and remember, okay, did you buy these forms?
No.
No. Because, certainly if somebody's making, and this happens all the time, we have special real estate forms, and we sell them to you. Well, they're going to put in stuff that keeps you from using them in an open way.
Yeah.
And so that would mean that they're not going to support the Chromebook. So it's hard for me to know exactly what's not working. But if you get, for instance, a PDF, a fillable PDF from the IRS for your tax forms, those work fine on a Chromebook. Usually the government is careful about making sure that no commercial entity is required for you to read those forms.
So if we're not opening those, then there's just something wrong with the software.
The Chromebook is complete. You can't really change anything. Now, I have a more capable PDF reader that I pay for. There are many extensions, Chrome extensions, that might add the capabilities you need. I use a PDF reader called Kami, K-A-M-I. It's a Chrome extension, but there's many. If you go to the extensions store on your Chromebook and you type PDF, you'll see a number of PDF readers, and some of them may add the capability of looking at locked fields or fields that are somehow protected like that. If it opens in LibreOffice, then almost certainly you should be able to open it with one of those, Kami or something. I use Kami. I like it. And there, you can try it free, and then I think there's a paid pro version, something like that.
All right, and all that stuff is safe in the extension store, I guess.
Yeah, so you go to your settings on your Chrome browser, and you I think it's tools, more, and then you'll see extensions, and then when you open extensions, you'll show what extensions are installed, but you can also at the bottom get more extensions that put you in the extension store.
And for regular Word files, it's always going to convert it to a Google Doc, is that right?
It'll open it and read it. If you save it, it will then convert it to a Google Doc.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, if you're going to modify it and save it, then it has to, because it can't save it out as an Office doc. But it's compatible with Office. It can be round-tripped. It is the case that there's some features you can use in Microsoft Office that can't be round-tripped. Round-trip means convert to Google Docs and then back to Office. You'll lose some features by doing that.
All right.
Yeah, I'm glad you like the Chromebook. Admittedly, it isn't Microsoft Office on there. So, nor is it Acrobat Reader. So there may be some limitations. But, boy, I think it's a great solution. In fact, I'm expecting the next couple of days the new Samsung Chromebook Plus, which is inexpensive, very lightweight, just about 2.5 pounds, and has a stylus. It supports the Android store. Once you get these newer Chromebooks and you can use Android apps as well as Chrome, then there really is no limit. Then you can use Microsoft Office. There's an Android version of Office.
Yeah, no, we had one with the 4G, and they don't make those anymore, I don't think. But I guess
no. You need them. Yeah. Isn't that frustrating? I really like that LTE. Yeah. I think what happened is people realized, well, I can do a hotspot from my phone. I don't want to pay for a second internet account. So that makes sense. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Enjoy. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, Dr. Mom says, and I didn't know this, if you have Office 365, which I do, you know, you can subscribe to that. I have the home version for $8 a month, something like that. You can install Office on a Chromebook. Dr. Mom, is that a Chrome? It must be a Chrome extension. That's interesting. Well, when I get this new Chromebook, which I should in the next couple of days, I'll keep that here so that I can. Chromebook is not a full computer. It is everything you can do in Chrome, no more, no less. And, of course, it can be hacked to do more, but as it stands, out of the box, it's basically a Chrome browser. And now the new ones have the Google Play Store, which means you can add many, not all, but many Android apps to it. That's pretty compelling, I have to say. It's pretty exciting. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Correct me if I'm wrong, either by calling. If you've got a solution for any of our callers, if you think, oh, I got something for Greg, you can also leave it at the website, techguylabs.com. It's open for comments there. Coming up, everybody's favorite gizmo wizard, Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz, and a gadget of the week. Stay right here. Our show today brought to you by the famous, world famous Quicken Loans, the number one mortgage lender in our hearts. Okay, they're number two in the United States in terms of loans written. That's pretty big. There's one company bigger, but that's the one you don't want to work with. Quicken. I'm not going to name names. You can do the research if you want. I like Quicken Loans, and you will too, especially if you're a geek, because Quicken Loans has a new tool they call Rocket Mortgage that makes the entire loan process entirely online. So no longer, my friends, no longer do you have to go out and visit with a mortgage lender and bring a banker's box full of paperwork. You could just do it all at quickenloans.com/techguy. Everything, even submitting bank statements and pay stubs, all that stuff, you can do it online. If it's time to buy a new house or time to refinance, and this may be the best time to refinance. I think interest rates are going up a little bit. You got to go to quickenloans.com/techguy. Rocket Mortgage is fast, it's powerful, it's completely online. And because it's, online, it's one of those friction-free processes where you have complete control. You're getting it from a great mortgage lender that you trust. It's completely transparent. You understand exactly what's going on. You even get little sliders. You can change the rate, the length of the loan, all that stuff to make sure you're getting the mortgage that fits your needs. And because it's computers, you'll get that mortgage loan approval in minutes. Not months. It literally took us 6 weeks the last time we bought a house. 6 weeks to get mortgage approval. I wish we'd had Rocket Mortgage back then. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. Quickenloans.com/techguy. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quickenloans.com/techguy. Tech guy. He's as chill as ice. He's the Giz Whiz, Dick DiBartolo, the coolest writer at Mad Magazine. He also joins every week, joins us with a gidget or a gazmo.
Yeah, exactly. Both of those.
You got a gidget for this week?
I do, and a gazmo, both.
Okay, good.
Actually, now, this might be of interest to you. I know you are a big man in the kitchen. You,
I am.
You even you own some knives and things.
I own my own knives.
Okay. Yep. All mm-hmm. right. So there's the houseware show preview in the city.
Okay.
So do you know about, have you ever made zoodles?
I've made noodles. I've made ziti. What's zoodles?
Zoodles, or have you made swoodles?
Never made swoodles or zoodles.
Okay. Well, then, wait a minute. Do you not have a spiralizer?
I do have a spiralizer. Are zucchini noodles?
Yes.
I make those all the time.
Okay, and what do you think swoodles are?
Swedish noodles?
Very close.
Sweaty sweet noodles? Sweet potato noodles.
Noodles, yes.
No,
yes.
I make spaghetti sauce. I make my grandma's spaghetti sauce, my mom's spaghetti sauce all the time. And I love pasta, but I don't want to eat pasta anymore. So Lisa and I spiralize zucchini, and it's great. It's just like spaghetti, and you put the sauce on. It's delicious.
Yeah.
Much more helpful, too.
Exactly. So Black & Decker at this house with preview was showing that Hamilton Beach.
I was going to say, Black & Decker, you mean the tool manufacturer?
No, and put a spiral. Besides, it's not Black & Decker. It's now Black Plus Decker.
Big difference.
Okay.
But this isn't either. This is Hamilton Beach.
Okay. The 4-in-1 electric spiralizer.
Oh, I might need this.
Yeah, you know what? So it comes with 4 different blade situations. They had a whole tray of this great stuff, and I said to the woman, "Is that bacon?" And she said, "No, that's a purple carrot." I said,
"Oh, yum!"
Yes, yeah. You know, you can trick kids into eating food. So that's the old version.
Yeah, this is only 3-in-1.
Yes, exactly.
So you have a 4-in-1.
You want the 4-in-1. You know, it may not be on their website yet. Yeah. Actually, if you go to Tech Guy Labs, there's a picture of it there.
Okay.
It's going to be this. It's going to be the same price. It's coming out in a couple of months. They said it would be out in April of this year, and it's going to start out as an exclusive at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Well, see, now I have the little manual thing. It looks like a wizard's hat with little slicers in it that you jam the cucumber or the zucchini in and you turn it by hand. It looks like this just kind of automates that process.
This automates that process. That little 6-cup bowl that comes with it also has a snap-on cover. So if you don't finish all the veggies that you spiralized, you can store it in that container.
But now it doesn't have to just be swoodles. Or zoodles. It looks like you can make potato chips and bacon and stuff.
Yes. Well, I said, can I make curly fries my favorite thing? Of course. Yes. Curly fries. Yes. Except, you know, you probably have to fry them and you don't do that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Are you doing anything fried?
No, the whole point of this is not to make more fattening food.
Well, it depends. For me. Once I buy it.
Yeah, then I can do anything I want with it. No, that's a good idea. You can make potato chips. You can make curly fries. Actually, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's going to be $50, and it'll be shipping in April, so just 2 months away.
Yeah, because I go.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's probably good exercise.
It is. My wrists are looking like Popeye right now. No, I bought an add-on for my KitchenAid. You know, I'm one of those big standalone KitchenAid mixers, and it has an accessory port. And for probably like $150, I can't remember, I bought a spiralizer attachment.
And okay.
The problem is I feel silly setting this whole thing up, and in 30 seconds, it's done.
Yes, that's the thing.
It takes 5 minutes to set it up.
Amazingly fast.
And it's like, oh. Yeah.
At the demo, she took a zucchini, and I said, now show me how it.
It's over.
It was done.
It's over.
Exactly.
But I think this is actually really great. If you want to eat more healthfully, and you don't want to give up the marinara, the bolognese, the puttanesca, You gotta have something healthier than that. And you know, it's quite good.
You make zucchini pasta and then use your bolognese sauce on it?
Yeah, which probably adds a little to the calories. But at least it's better than, but it's really good.
Oh, okay.
No, I make a great bolognese.
I think that's a great idea, yeah.
And what we do is we make a lighter bolognese. We don't put as much meat into it. And my marinara is probably not much better. It's got a stick of butter in it. So I probably should cut back on that too. Okay. Hey, one of these days I got to tell you about my new gadget. My June oven came.
Oh, okay. Do we have to wait until June?
Yes.
Okay. No, I want to hear about it.
It's the most expensive toaster oven in the world, $1,500. But it's got like a smartphone built into it. You put this. I mean, there's some cool stuff. You put a piece of toast in there. Yeah. And it lights up and says, okay, it has a camera in it. You either just put in toast or strudel. Which is it? It's toast.
Me.
It says, okay, how do you want it? You want it light, medium, light, dark? What do you want? Push the button and goes, okay. And then your phone lights up, says your toast is in, with a video of your toast in real time toasting. And then it makes a nice pleasant sound when it's done and you can go get it.
Wow. You know, you should have spent the extra $50. It will eat it for you.
that way there were no calories. But it's great. We made salmon last night. It's got a temperature probe. You put it in there. You put the salmon in. It says either it's either salmon or strudel. For some reason, it thinks everything is strudel. And I said, no, that's salmon. And it says, do you want it to be, how do you want us to cook? Firm or... I don't know what it says. Google it.
Right, so this is all on a tray then. You're not dropping it into a pop-up.
No, it's a toaster oven. It's like a regular...
It's an oven,
and then it's got a thing. But you put the salmon on the tray. You put the probe in the salmon. You close the door. It says, I see salmon. And you say, yes. And then it also has firmware updates. So if you can give it feedback, how did that cook? Do you like that? And you say, no, it wasn't done quite enough. Okay, we're going to update the firmware. We'll cook it a little more next time. Is that wild?
It's bizarre. Holy
cow.
Come
over to the house. I'll bake you a loaf of bread.
Oh, okay. Very good. On the plane, I'll order it. So when I'm off the plane, it'll be ready.
Put the steak in. It says, is this steak or is this strudel? I don't even know. What is strudel? I think it's like a Pop-Tart.
No, strudel is like multi-layered dough.
Why does it keep thinking everything's a strudel? I don't understand. Apparently, strudel can look like a lot of other things.
A lot of strudel.
Yeah.
Once it gets to know you, it'll never mention strudel again.
I hope not. Man, he's never put strudel in. I guess we'll stop offering it. If you want to find out more about the new 4-in-1 electric spiralizer and all of the other great stuff Dick has on his website, go to gizwiz.biz. When you're there, you can also play the What the Heck Is It contest. Chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Find out about his great weekly podcast, too, the GizWiz at gizwiz.tv. Is there anything else I can plug for you?
No, I think you did a wonderful job.
And read his stuff every month in Mad Magazine. You have not missed an issue for many, many decades.
Yeah, 50 years.
What? He started as a child.
As a child, literally.
Wow. What is in this month's edition?
Let's see. This issue is an elevator safety inspection card.
So you can
put it in the elevator, and if someone bothers to read it, it'll go. Last inspection, replaced chain with a cord because chain was making too much noise.
I love it. So, newsstands right now. Thank you, Dickie D.
Very good. Buddy. Take care.
Thanks to Mike Cozy, our musical director, for spinning the hits. Even if I get the names wrong, at least you spun them. Thanks also to Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, for answering the phones. Most importantly, thanks to you for joining me. It'd be really silly to do a talk show if no one called. It'd be awful. It'd be painful. So thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. And we'll see you next time. Have a great Geek Week. I'm Leo Laporte.
The Tech Guy.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.